Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have on the phone Chris Sheridan, Mr. Chris Sheridan, otherwise known as.
What's going on, Mr. Chris, to you, bud.
Yeah. That's Mr. Chris to you.
What's your name, Chris? Exactly. Mr. Chris.
Mr. Chris. Yeah,
I'll try that next time at the casino tables.
Yeah, in Monaco. And here's I'm gonna really date myself. They call me Mr. Tibbs.
Sidney Poitier.
Do you remember that?
Yeah,
Sidney. I like to pronounce it Mr. Sidney Poitier. You gotta really get into it.
And a pause in between there. That's good. A dramatic pause.
It's very dramatic, wasn't it?
Stage and screen. So,
stage and screen, if you will. And there you go. You are without electricity today, so we're going to try to make this a brief show. I know you're working on battery power over there, so
I have a good signal and I have plenty of power, so I think we're good to go.
And so we are good to go. We are speaking about reaching the center. Truth leads all things to itself, and that is a Manly Hall video. Actually, we're drawing from a Manly Hall video. It's a lecture. But it's a video that that Chris put up on Manly Hall Society, which he runs very diligently and does a fantastic job with. And some of the best Manly Hall lectures that you're going to hear online are at Manly Hall Society. So just look up Manly Hall Society on YouTube, and you will find excellent, high quality, engineered audio and so on. You don't have commercials on any of the things,
no.
So it's just. You know, it's just a really fantastic resource. And so many people are trying to, you know, cut their own commercials into stuff, or they're, you know, ripping off audio from this and that person and stuff. You've got really nice, clean audio, and it's, you know, it's beautifully presented and so on. And so Manly Hall Society, and you're putting up videos almost, once every couple of weeks or once every week? Or what are you doing right now?
Yeah, a couple of months, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, you've got a nice following on there. So
well, this one has a transcript as well. There's a
That's right. Thank you.
Transcript,
yeah.
Which not very many of them do. And that's at manlyhall.com. It's the most recent blog post. And it's got a link to the video, embedded video. But it has the full text of this, hour and 20 minute lecture that really stood out as being interesting enough to just, you know, we're going to spend an hour covering,
do a full show on, you know, yeah.
Just, you know, but listen to that as well, and or follow along with the transcript. So it's a lot of ways to get to the original text, because that's certainly important, but we're going to take a look at it because we've already taken a listen to it, and we're going to talk about it.
Perfect. Perfect. So we're running on all cylinders here. We're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
So reaching the center, truth leads all things to itself, the title of this one. So we'll just start out. Oh, actually, let me thank everyone. I always need to do my preface and say thank you, everyone who's listening. And thank you for all of our supporters who are supporting the show. We really do appreciate you guys. God bless you all. And if you would care to contribute to the show, you can do so at anchor.fm/cosmiceye, and you can make a small donation. Every little bit helps, and you can even offer just like 99 cents a month if that's all you can afford. But know that it goes to a good cause, keeping the show on and, you know, trying to get out to more people these positive spiritual messages, esoteric studies, and so on that Chris and I are doing a couple times a week now. We've also got the Emmett Fox show that you can listen to on Fridays. So, you know, we're just trying to spread the good news, the gospel, as they say, the good spell, as that word comes from. And it's not any particular creed or particular religion, but just the good news from all spiritual traditions. So check us out and share with your friends if you like what we're doing. All right, so we'll start then with this Manly Hall lecture, and we'll talk a little bit about, we're just going to follow through mainly through the first half of the lecture, and we'll get into some of the points at the end and stuff. But one of the really cool features in this one is that he talks a lot about martial arts. And of course, as any of you know who've listened to the other shows and stuff, you know, I love martial arts and have been participating in boxing, martial arts, and so on for most of my life. I teach Filipino martial arts as well. And, you know, so this is a subject that's close to my heart. So what we're going to look at then is some of the sort of spiritual dimensions, the philosophical dimensions of martial arts. Manly Hall was really way ahead of his time in this lecture. It was like, I think this one came out November 11th, 1962. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you got to remember, this is before Bruce Lee. This is before all of the, you know, the well-known martial artists in the West, and before there was a Taekwondo school on every corner, and before there were 8 million martial arts movies all over the place, and before MMA, and before all of that. So, you know, he's really kind of introducing some of these ideas. There was a lot of misunderstandings about what martial arts were and so forth. And he was helping to really kind of clarify the purpose of martial arts, and particularly in judo. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But he was way ahead of his time on this one. I was quite impressed with it. So the first thing that he really talked about, and just kind of contextualize this, he talked about how we in the West are really focused on external life, as opposed to, you know, most people in the East, in India and Asia and so on. It's a little different attitude towards life there. It's a little more interdirected. One might call it a little more introspective, or, you know, this type of thing. So it's a kind of an inward focused life that's definitely more prevalent in the East than it is in the West. And we in the West, of course, live this, like you said, an external life. So he felt that, and he shared this idea that, you know, martial arts was one of the ways that people could kind of get in touch with this. This is one of maybe the Eastern ideas that he felt like got to the United States and got to the West that was a valuable contribution, as long as it was adapted to our lifestyle. He did make that point. So basically, he mentions in the beginning, and then I'm going to hand it over to you. He mentions in the beginning of this need to develop a sense of quiet, a sense of going within. And, you know, that's where he really contrasts that with, you know, our external form of life that we live. And by external life, I mean, you know, we in the West, we tend to look outside of ourselves for most of our direction, for most of our entertainment, for most of our, you know, sort of just day-to-day experiences. And, you know, that would be our work life, our social life, school, you know, family life, all the stuff that's going on, the busyness, the day-to-day busyness of life, right? And he really was stressing this idea of developing a sense of quiet and going within yourself to develop a calm center. That's why he's talking about reaching the center, develop a calm center so that, you know, even if you are moving through that external life, you're doing it with a sense of internal sort of peace and solidity in a sense. Do you want to follow up on that?
Sure. The, you know, this structure of this lecture is almost like in three acts. You know, he sets up this idea of quietude, he calls it, and even goes on to call it being constructively quiet. That you're just calming the stress and you're kind of getting to, you know, sea level, you're getting to ground, you know, point level. It's actually even more than that. You're so quiet, or that's in this stillness, it's actually doing good for you, not just calming the storm. You're actually being productive, or he says constructively quiet.
Constructive, yeah.
That's a great point. You know, and he's, you know, it's a big thing, and you know, he does make a really big point about the West and the busyness, and he makes a crack about some manager at a firm, you know, gets reprimanded by the superintendent, says, you know, what's with these people? They, you know, they don't look like they're doing anything. This is terrible. And he goes, well, actually, we're more productive than we've ever been. He goes, well, we'll make them look busy. Like, you know, there has to be this.
It's just a missing element of stress.
You know, wipe your brow, people. Furl your, yeah, right. your nose.
Just try to look more miserable while you're working.
A little more stress, you know.
That's amazing.
And that's the thing. Well, it's, yeah, what's the bumper sticker? You know, Jesus is coming, look busy.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because, you know, oftentimes you do see that in businesses, and, you know, I worked in, you know, at a sort of business to business website back in the early 2000s. And, you know, the time, you know, at that time it was like this really go, you know, kind of ideal, of like, you know, just working so many hours and all this stuff. And, you know, people would be at work for, you know, 10, 12 hours a day and stuff. And then, you know, you really kind of watch though what people are doing, and you see like how much wasted time there is. It's like people are kind of, you know, they're showing up super early and going to bed, you know, going home super late. But like, you look at the levels of productivity, and, you know, most likely, you know, you probably could have done all that work in you know, 3.5 hours if you were more focused, let's say. But, you know, but there's this idea that you're trying to, you know, you're really looking busy and you're really, you know, you're really working hard and this and that. And I think that's what he's getting at when he's talking about going to the center, because you're so much more efficient when you're working with that center of quietude than you are when you've created like a calm within the storm, in a sense. You know, it's like this inner sort of calm that you can carry through these like stressful situations, and it makes you more productive. And I think that, what did he call it? Constructive quiet? Constructive quiet?
Yeah, constructively. Be constructively quiet.
Constructively quiet. Yeah. I mean, that's genius. That's genius. You know, he talks too about a little bit about how we don't really like to think too much or even read or, you know, develop any kind of internal life in the West. And in a lot of ways that is true for a lot of, you know, maybe people that listen to shows like this are probably more of an exception to that. But I think in general, you know, the average person walking down the street doesn't really want to use his brain too much. And, you know, not that people are stupid. It's just, it's hard work to think. It's hard work sometimes to read a bit, and it's hard work to develop an inner life. It takes an effort. You know, and sometimes you got to fight against the grain of society to develop who you are as an individual and really follow your own destiny and things like that. But well, what he points out
can be a problem too. That just to throw this in, that yeah, we can. There is also another group of people who have a tendency to maybe overthink things. There's maybe too much emphasis.
Who might some people like that?
I've heard of these people. I don't know who they are or where they
are. Yeah, I could never. I can't relate to that. I cannot relate to such a thing. Wow. Yeah.
But I think the analogy is the same. At this point, you know, everything's kind of in the ether anyway with the internet and,
yeah,
and everything else. That,
yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of it is in the mind. We have a lot in, but then that becomes busy. And that's just the same as having an external life. We have kind of a material internal life with a lot of thoughts and a lot of feelings, and a lot of things bouncing around. And this happens.
Yeah.
It's information coming in from all angles and having to process it, even if we're not even
talking
to anybody.
You're right.
We're very, very busy there. But that's, again, that's not the same as having
not what he's talking
a
about.
Meaningful inner life. That's just kind of a mind equivalent of a, you know, an external
of the business.
Yeah.
That's
so
one of
the point you're trying to make, but I wanted to say that that's, and in a way it doesn't matter if you're equally distracted, if you're equally, you know, chaotic with, you know, all these things or juggling these things.
Yeah.
What you're not is centered inside.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's
either
you know
we're busy outside or busy inside. What we're not is calm and centered. And
that's
where
good
we need to be.
That's a good way to contextualize it today, because again, this was in 1962 and there were a lot less distractions. I mean, certainly people were listening to records, they were listening to the radio, you know, they were reading newspapers and so on, but there was not a screen on every, you know, bathroom wall and music in every store that you went into. And, you know, just a constant barrage of media everywhere we go. And then we carry one around in our pocket, even if we, God forbid, get a two seconds of silence, like, and I see this too with people, you know, driving, you know, people are driving in the car, they stop at the light and boom, they're on the phone immediately, like checking Instagram or something, or, you know, checking in with their messages or whatever. And it's like, you can't even have that, you know, 2 minute pause of quiet just to look around and see what's going on. You've got to, you know, jump right into a screen and, you know, creating that sense of sort of inner calm, you know, necessitates kind of taking control of some of our habits and saying, you know what, as I'm driving, I really don't need to think about what's going on in the digital world. I'm just going to focus on my environment. I'm going to focus on the feeling of the wheel in my hand. I'm going to smell smells. I'm going to open the window. I'm going to keep my eyes open and moving, and I'm going to focus on my driving. You can make it a sort of meditation in a sense, right? And really connect
to
that.
How about the metal, steel, glass, and concrete world of driving?
Yeah,
might be a good idea to work on that.
To focus on that. Yeah, because you forget you've got a multi-ton vehicle. I don't know. What does a car weigh? A ton? It's a ton, right? 2 tons?
More,
depending on how big it is. You're driving one of those SUVs. Look, you're driving around a lot of weight, and it's dangerous. And we take that for granted because it's so comfortable and it's so easy to drive and so on. But I mean, keep your mind focused on what you're doing. It's a dangerous world we live in. We have to focus, you know, and I don't mean that to be, you know, it's got to create fear, but you know, we do have a lot of dangerous machines and we're in charge of these things. And it's a big responsibility. Take the responsibility seriously. You know, yours and your families and other people's lives are at stake. And so that focus really does become crucial. So that leads us into, I think, the kind of martial arts aspect of it. So we'll just jump right into that, since the bulk of this lecture is about that. He talks about, you know, and that's where that inner world and that outer world meet in martial arts. And that's the focus of this lecture for the most part. So he contextualized it and started the discussion about martial arts by talking about Dr. Kano. And Dr. Kano basically was a martial artist who found jiu-jitsu in Japan. And he found that it was kind of overly violent and it was overly competitive and it had kind of lost its sort of spirit of sort of spirituality and ethics and so on. And what he did is he ended up adapting that and providing sort of more ethical elements and bringing Zen into it and creating judo. He created judo. So this that Manly Hall was drawing on is, you know, it's because a metaphor for actually the true way of martial arts. You know, it's not about the violence. It's not about the competition, and it's certainly not about you know, who can destroy his opponent. If you're talking about the true spirit of martial arts as it's coming out of China and moving into Japan and it's in its original form. He did talk a little bit, and I have to make this point. He did talk a little bit about the terrible violence in boxing. And mind you, this is, again, 1962, and boxing was pretty damn violent in 1962. It still has elements of violence, but it's much more controlled, and the gear is much better, and the referees are much more schooled on watching for people, you know, getting hurt and things like that. So it is a lot safer, especially amateur boxing. And amateur boxing, in a lot of ways, is much closer to martial arts than it is like a, you know, any what you would call like a blood sport or something like this. But even like I say, this is my defense of boxing only because, you know, I love boxing. But he doesn't really badmouth. He's just kind of contrasting it against what's going on with judo and with martial arts. So this leads us into some of these ideas that he points out, and he uses martial arts really as a metaphor for life. And he talks about economics and how often economics has an unfair sort of competition. You're trying to destroy the competitor and so on. And this is where he was talking about how Dr. Kano, when he added the ethical element to judo, he really added something special to it. And he really was getting back to what, you know, what martial arts were all about in its ancient form. And I think, you know, might have lost some of that spirit in Japan at that time. So he re-added that Zen element. And then he called it, I love this term that he used, physical and psychic self-defense. Because it is a full mind-body experience, isn't it?
Definitely. So, and, you know, and that can be, he goes throughout this, and we're going to, you know, we're covering this as we go. He goes back and forth between maybe a very external, very physical, very tangible and practical example of what balanced and centered means, and relates that to also what is inner balance, what is inner, and really there's kind of no difference. And yes, and mm-hmm. it's a martial arts is such a great tool or, you know, a theme to use to describe where those two in a very meaningful way meet, but they also meet in life.
Yeah, it's such a, you know, the thing that in anyone who's experienced martial arts in any way, or, you know, watch, I mean, we've all seen movies, or we've all, you know, known people, most of us who've, you know, are involved and so on, or it's tangentially, we've all seen kind of what goes on. But it's so apparent. I mean, it's such a clear delineation between like doing something correctly and not doing something correctly, especially when you're, you know, you're sparring or there's some sort of, you know, there's some sort of competitive element to it. Because, you know, for example, you know, if you, you know, basically if you do something wrong, you get hit. If you don't block a punch, you know, it's coming through and you're going to catch it and, you know, some part of your body, and it doesn't feel good. So it's like, it's a very visceral sort of, you know, immediate kind of reaction, action and reaction sort of thing that, you know, that puts mind and body like in this space where if they're not working together, you are, you know, you have lost already. One thing that he pointed out, I like this idea. He talked about in judo, there's no idea of winning at all cost. You know, we've seen some sports scandals, and recently in baseball, there was some sports scandal, I think, with the Astros or something. And, you know, we see this stuff all the time, unfortunately, in pro sports and college sports. And, you know, people start pushing and cheating, and they're pushing too far, and they're, you know, doing things that hurt the young people involved, and they're, you know, actually hurting the image and the integrity of that particular sport or whatever, you know. And he points out that winning at all cost is not a tenet in judo at all. And in fact, he says you're going in to try to prove you're a gentleman, or, you know, or a gentlewoman, you know, because a lot of women actually participate in judo as well. They're excellent. Try to prove you're more skillful than your opponent. You're trying to you know, really show that you've got a higher level of skill. So you've got to, not only do you, you're trying to win in a sense, shouldn't say you're trying to win, because actually it makes the point that you're not trying to win. You're trying to demonstrate your most skillful abilities. And, you know, if that defeats your opponent, then you are in the right mindset. So if you're not, you know, then you accept defeat gracefully and with honor and gentility. He pointed that out. So, you know, and he talks about too, how emotion should be used to the best that we know. So we can use our emotion in that situation, not in a way like we're becoming super aggressive, but being assertive, you know, being a sportsman, you know, doing the correct things with honor and you know, winning the bout that way, but not really attached to the outcome. And that's a very Taoist concept, isn't it? Not being attached to the outcome of the contest. That's also in Bhagavad Gita too. Krishna tells that to Arjuna when they're on the field of battle. You cannot be attached to the outcome. You have to go in with a pure heart. So these ideas, you know, do even come, they go even further back than these martial arts. They go back to India, ancient India.
Well, it goes to life, you know, is what he talks about. Sure. He brings in the ethics of life. And when me and Holly and anybody else starts talking about, well, what, you know, what happens in life, or it's, oh, it's just like life. Well, what is life? And one of the grand examples we have is nature with a capital N. What does nature do? Does nature avoid conflict? Does it avoid struggle and fighting to the death? No, there's fights to the death every minute of the day all across the world in the natural kingdom. A spider is, you know, snaring a fly, and a cheetah is taking down a zebra. But he's talking about a very, very different type of competition where the, you know, you one strong one beats the other strong one, the top of the food chain, you know, kills each other, you know, all in for this victory at any cost. But nature doesn't do that. The law of the jungle
is not at all.
The fastest cheetah has to be a little bit faster than the slowest zebra. And so from the top of the predator picks from the bottom of the prey. And that is the way of nature. So basically we're talking about something unnatural. And yes, if you're having a sporting competition, yes, you can have a playing field, you're going to put limits, you have a time limit, you have, you know, all these things, because then it's a game and then it's a sporting game. But we seem to take this completely unnatural attitude to sports and war and, you know, business, relationships. Yeah. How many relationships have, you know, come under the
suffered
fire of winning at all costs? What, your own, you know, your own integrity, your own family. Yeah,
oh, how about divorces? How about divorces? Oh my God!
At all, spare no expense to win at all costs.
And destroy your kids and everything you've built in the process to really get back at that person that you actually loved that person at one time. How quickly love turns into hate, and you know he talks about that. And that's another thing. You're right. Nature, there's no malice. There's no hate in a big cat. You know, it's just doing what it does. And it, you know, for all we know, it could have love in its heart for that prey that it's stalking, you know. So it's doing something natural, and it's not, you know, there's no, there's, again, there's no waste. There's no, You know, there's no greed, there's no anger, there's no hate in its heart. It's just pure, you know. And that's actually a very Zen attitude towards martial arts. And there's an example of that in a Zen story about this samurai whose master was killed, and then he was sent out to avenge the master's death. A ronin, a sort of a masterless samurai, had murdered this teacher that was the head of their clan. And so this samurai hunted for this guy for years and years and years. He was out on the road and finally ran into him in this little village and had him cornered in some sort of a barn or something. And they were about to fight, and he was about to pull his sword, and the other guy had his hand on his sword. And the ronin, the one who he was trying to find, spit in the honorable samurai's face. And the samurai just, you know, he had brought his sword out just slightly. He was about to draw it. He put his sword back in and just bowed and walked out. And he did so because he became angry, and he would not fight in anger, because he was on he knew that he would have to go and do that another day and make that battle another day, because he allowed himself to become angry by having that person spit in his face. And so to be honorable, he couldn't draw his sword and fight that guy. He knew, he could have beat him, but he didn't do it because, you know, like I said, he was angered, and then he would be acting out of his own ego to do what his duty was. And so that's really that idea of being in accord with nature. You know, you're doing the duty of and responsibility of what, you know, the natural order of things. In that particular case, that's the natural order of samurai life, right? So,
well, it's an ethical, you know, life, and it's an ethical jungle that to civilized man seems, you know, brutal and harsh, but it's ethical, and it's,
well, it has its own natural laws, doesn't it? And just because we don't understand it oftentimes doesn't mean that it doesn't have its own system of ethics, right? It's you're right about that. So I think, you know, because I think we look at some of the times these, you know, nature videos and stuff where we see, you know, animals hunting, and it's like, it looks very brutal. It does, because most of us don't see that. You know, we don't hunt our own food. We don't see animals fighting. We don't see that sort of violence. And so we kind of think, oh God, nature's so horrible, and it's, you know, tooth and claw, and, you know, red and bloody and this and that. Yes, it has its moments of that, but, you know, anyway, I don't want to get too far into it, but there's a natural order to things, and the earth has its own natural rhythm. And, you know, that's part of this whole idea that we're putting ourselves in accord with it. It doesn't mean we're running around with a band and killing things. It means that we're in the natural order of things, you know. And as human beings, of course, we can make different choices based on that. If we don't want to eat animals, we don't have to, and all that. And we have that luxury as you know, since we built the society that we have. So. At any rate, all right, so I'm getting off track, but that was another thing. So this was leading into this next one, find your center and find your balance. He talked about that. And, you know, this is again in conjunction with judo, but true for all martial arts and true for life. Lose your temper and you lose. Never be angry and never be afraid, Manly Hall said. And those are wise words there. And, you know, a challenge certainly to embody, but, you know, living that way, never be angry, never be afraid. How much more pure are your intentions if you can get those two things out of the way? You know, fear and anger are, you know, some of the most powerful motivators for us oftentimes. You know, how much of our lives are based on those two emotions? You know, and then the other thing, you'd kind of delineated that then down into this idea of thought versus worry. So you're saying, like, well, thought is you know, positive sort of mind power moving in the right direction to solve a problem, while his worry is just disillusion. It has no meaning, and it's kind of breaking things down. In essence, it's breaking down the possibility of solution, and not in a good way, you know. So yeah, those are two things to look at, and finding your center and finding your balance, in essence, because you know, without that clarity, and without, you know, that non-angry, non-fearful stance, it's very difficult to think clearly, you know, because most of the time, if we're afraid, we're worrying. If we're angry, we're usually worrying about something. We're not thinking clearly to solve the problem.
Well, and we'll act. That hoarding will act out of desperation or out of lack. And sometimes, yeah, if you're in a desperate situation, but you know what? If you're in an, and he points this out too, if you're in an actual emergency where that's immediate and imminent and it requires your immediate action without time to think, we're actually in a clearer space then, because instantly we kind of remove all that stuff and we are thinking from a truth core. And he uses an example of a car accident or would-be car accident that time expanded and everything seemed in slow motion. And the last second, the person knew exactly what to do and saved the day and nobody got hurt. But what we're, the emergencies we're talking about are the everyday emergencies that we are almost in a constant state of emergency, or we're on watch, or what could happen, or maybe what didn't happen, or what shouldn't have happened. And what are we going to do about it? And what if this person does this? Who said this online? There's this almost this very agitated state that we're in. And it's throwing us off. But by the time even before you throw the first punch, you've already thrown your, you know, either physically, if you're using this as a metaphor, or spiritually or psychically, you're off balance. You're shooting off with the tongue, lashing out maybe before you got the information in, or constantly reacting to things.
Yeah.
But this finding the balance, it not only keeps you from falling over and getting hurt, when you can really get in this state of quietude and really find this truth core. And I thought a lot about what, you know, he calls it a truth core. And it's what's inside. If you can get really to this center of our own being, of our own self, that's where truth is. There's an inner truthiness, I guess, to ourselves.
Yeah.
Like an inner divinity, that it's truth with a capital T that knows everything, knows what to do in that emergency situation on the highway, knows what to do in an argument, and also just, or in a, you know, what could be a fight, like your story of the samurai. And I thought of this, you know, truth core. Well, you know, a lot of times we don't know ourselves. We don't know what we're all about. And that can be a huge subject and it can take a long time to get to that. But using that word core, and I thought about core, and it's like, I love apples. And it's like, well, the core is the thing you cut out. The core is kind of the thing you throw away when you're eating the apples. You know, what's this core? What's at the core of things? Okay, it's at the center. It's the core. And we, you know, we talk about core exercise now, that if you can strengthen your core, it makes it better for everything, which is true. It's great exercise. Have a strong core training. But then I thought again about the apple core, and it's what connects the apple to the tree, you know, the stem that's in the center of the core. And in that core are the seeds for more apple trees. So it's this regenerative thing that, you know, not only down to the truth, but then you get the archetype pattern of really what you are. And then what are you growing, you know, from your core? You have good seeds, and, you know, are they fertile? Is it, you know, is this the kind of thing that we, you know, we are putting out there? Because when we do speak out of turn or throw a punch off balance, really stick our nose where it shouldn't belong.
Exactly.
You know, we're not really putting the best out there. The fruit we're bearing is not all that pleasant. So, yeah, it was kind of an interesting word, core, and you know, can look at it in a lot of different ways. But it's kind of the thing that holds it together. It's where the source came from. It's what, from the tree connected with the stem, it's what made the apple possible. And then, of course, that makes the seeds possible, which makes the whole thing. So you're getting to talk about truth. If you're, you know, from the apple, you're getting to a seed that becomes another apple tree that makes apples. I mean, that's that's the cycle of life right there. And
well, you call that seed, you call that the truth core, the center, also the seed of destiny center. He's talked about this, how your seed of destiny is in there. Which I thought
sounds like an album title. I like that. Seed of Destiny.
It does, doesn't it? Seed of Destiny. But yeah, I mean, of course, that core that we're talking about is that invisible center, that higher self portion of yourself, the God consciousness within you, and so on. And even use that term, which he rarely does. He called it the God center, the divine life principle, or the archetypal situation. which he mentioned as being the proper pattern for unfoldment of human character. And that's when he likened it to a seed or a seed of destiny. And that's all that center within yourself. And that's where you're that's what you're trying to reach through the practice of martial arts, but through the practice of life, through our interactions with people on a daily basis. You know, the martial arts is just a metaphor, isn't it?
So, well, it is. So how can we find this? How can we find our core? How can we pull back from all this reaching out and, you know, get this through quietude? Well, one thing we talked about, started out with, but yeah, let's go on.
Yeah. One thing you talked about that is a good analogy to this is this idea of a balance and equilibrium and being in the center of a circle. So, you know, in judo he says, and I haven't ever taken judo, so I'm not sure of these figures, but he talks about how you're supposed to stand firmly with your feet 3 feet apart. I like three just because it's a good symbolic number. With your head always over the center of this symbolic circle between the feet. So if you think about your feet being that sort of radius of that circle, and then you're always trying to keep your head in the center and level, essentially. You don't want it forward, you'll be off balance. And you don't want it back because you'll be off balance. Obviously, you don't want it left or right either. You want it just right in that center. And, you know, boxing is the same way. You know, when you're practicing moving around on your feet, working with your footwork and stuff and slipping, ducking under things and so on, you always keep your head in that same sort of position. The MMA is the same way, and any kind of, you know, wrestling and so on. It's that center of equilibrium, basically, that you're trying to create. And essentially, you know, I like that idea of not being too far forward. It makes me think of not being too far projected into the future, not being projected into the past, you know, in terms of being backwards, but being right there, right now, in that moment, in essence. And that's one of the ways to really be centered, is to be in the moment. You know, and how often are we in the moment during the day, really? I mean, think about it. Most of the time we're thinking about what we got to do next, or what happened, you know, before, or when we were a kid, this happened, or I don't like this song on the radio, so I want to turn it to something else, which is an idea for, you know, a future thing, then something better. But how often are we just in that moment? And that's why, you know, that's why martial arts is such a powerful tool for learning that, is in boxing and MMA. If you are not in that moment, you get socked in the face. So there you go. You know, there's no real question about, was I in the moment or wasn't I in the moment? When someone's throwing punches and kicks at you, or trying to get you into some kind of choke or something, you know, if you're not in the moment right then with the, you know, bringing all of your focus to bear on that moment, you know, you're not gonna do well. And life is like that too, though. You know, think about like the car analogy. You know, when you're in the car and you're fiddling around with your phone and you're trying to drink your Starbucks latte and you're yelling at the kids and you're doing this and you're doing that, you know, you're courting disaster. You know what I mean? Because you're not focused on that driving at that moment. You're off balance. You're not in the middle of the circle. You're not, your head's not centered in the circle. Your head's back, your head's forward, your head's to the left, your head's to the right. It's not focused. Do you know what I mean? And so it's really an apt analogy for how we live our lives, isn't it?
Yeah, well, one thing about driving, we've talked about this, is, you know, there is a muscle memory. So if we're going someplace familiar, at least part of our consciousness is focused on the driving, even if we're not.
Yeah, thank God.
But it can be, and thank God. And that's a reason, yeah. You know, you want to see divine intervention, try driving on the LA freeways about any day of the week. I'd pick Friday at about 3:30.
Yeah, exactly.
You will see divine intervention, invisible guardian angels and miracles happening
on everyone's
left
on
and right. It's like how every other mile, it's like, how did that not result in it? You know,
it's
not because we're all skilled drivers. It's that is definitely not the reason.
No, you're right.
There is something, some other forces working.
Something looking out for
our muscle memory, you know. Yeah,
but then how much more, you know, can we?
But it can be equally dangerous if we're talking to our kids and we say the wrong thing, or if we're
sure,
you know, even something that's not maybe as physically dangerous as driving, or you know, potentially, boy, the psychic damage and you know, that we can inflict on ourselves and others is, you know, really bound to happen more often, if we're not focused, if we're not centered, if we're not in that present, if we're not in that circle.
Yeah.
It's not a big circle.
Well, and not being driven by anger and fear in those moments, you know, and anger at your kids, for example, will result in you saying things you regret. So don't stop the anger. You can control the situation.
This center is, you know, yes, it's a place, and yes, it's there's contained within this center, you know, what is your core? What is that your core being? And this inner divinity. But I also see it as like an action, like centering. He calls it finding the center, reaching the center.
Yeah, reaching the center.
But, you know, centering, you know, it's like, oh, you want to center the map. You want to center yourself. You want to calibrate. You want to get this, you know, that it's a pause in between situation and action, or between thought and speaking about it, or stimulus and response, that there's this centering that takes place. And then when you balance the scales, you know, if you're weighing something, you weigh the truck first before you don't take everything out, you know what the truck weighs, and then you put it on the truck scale and whatever's in the back of the truck, and you subtract the truck weight, and that's how much it weighs. But there's this centering, this recalibrating, and it's kind of a nothing. It's a zero. Mm-hmm. If you really take this scale thing, this balance centering, you're getting it back to zero. To where it's at this midpoint. It's not this way or that way. And in that space, yes, it's a very present thing, but no activity can really take place. I think a lot of times there'll be a stimulus, there'll be a situation, and for a moment we're in the center because, oh gosh, look what's going on. I got to do something about this. And then we go straight to activity or thought or saying something or tweeting something back or whatever we do. But we don't pause in the center and get centered. And say,
that's true.
Okay, I'm going to bring this to the middle.
Let me make a quick plug here, because we do have that great show, and this was one of your suggestions, that Returning to Zero podcast. Remember that one? It goes very deeply into that concept. So definitely check that out if you're more interested in finding out about that. But continue. I'm sorry.
But that's what he at the beginning, Neil Hall spoke about quietude, and that is this.
Yeah,
centering, and it's really an empty space in our head and our heart, where we can just be at the level of acceptance. Acceptance is not approval again. Acceptance is just the recognition of what is. Oh, I'm here, and somebody said something really rude to me, and I feel my heart's racing, and I feel terrible, and I want to. But I'm going to stop here. It's this timeout. This 10-second count. But get to the center, and if you can get to breathing again and in this quietude, then from there you can move out. And yes, you may have to go back into the arena. You may have to struggle and fight for what is rightly yours if it's a conflict at work or something that needs resolved, but you're going to do it from a centered position.
Space. So
you're going back to the well, you're going back to center. I did take Taekwondo years ago, and Zhongbe, Kwan Jinan would say, and we would get in this, you do this, it's almost like calling a soldier to attention. Actually, it's very much like that, where there's kind of a hand motion, a foot motion, you put your fist down and you're standing straight and you are listening, you are completely aware, you're very much in that 10 hut, military.
Exactly.
It's called to attention. You're not doing anything, but boy, you are there. You're specifically not doing anything.
Yeah.
You're not. Well, but you are discipline. Listening to be told to do something when you're, so you wait for the direction.
Right. And that discipline creates that open space and that freedom. And I think sometimes we think of discipline as being something, well, I don't want to do it. It's like, that's just bringing me down, man. I don't want to have all this discipline, discipline. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, discipline, self-discipline and, principles and, living according to a law that you adhere to and so on actually gives you more freedom. That's the thing about it. It's like, if you've got a center and you're operating from the core of those principles. And that was another thing you pointed out about Judy. It's like, keep your own principles. That's part of keeping your own center, keeping your own principles and not being sucked into the outer world's sort of ideas and so on. And he made an example there of some man who had gotten so angry because he gotten scammed for some investment. And it was some, you know, unrealistic expectation that was sold to him. And so, you know, his own greed got the best of him. He wasn't keeping to his principles, or he wasn't keeping centered. So if we allow greed or fear or, you know, the desire for something for nothing, or, you know, we're trying to get over on somebody or whatever, then we're not following our principles. If, you know, we need to develop those ethical principles within ourselves and then follow those things and keep our own center. You know, so many people get sucked in by those things. They get so angry when they get scammed, and they think, oh, it's, you know, it's that the world out there is doing this and that, but, you know, you're allowing yourself to be knocked out because you're not on your center. You're not in your stance. You're not focused in the moment. You're not, you know, using those principles, right? It's do you remember the speaker scam that was going on, the white vans that would drive around with the speakers in the back trying to sell these big home speakers? Did you guys ever have that in your area when you were young?
I don't recall
this might have
that.
Been a West, like, Coast thing. I mean, you can even look it up. It's on Wikipedia. It's called the white van speaker scam. So these guys would drive around with these white vans, and then they'd give you this song and dance about how these just fell off a truck and this and that. And they're trying to act like, you know, they got hot merchandise in the back. But really what they got is a set of cheap speakers. They'd start talking about how they're water cooled, and they're giving you all these ridiculous, like, non-real, you know, just nonsense technical sort of explanations of how great these speakers are. And then they end up, you know, get roping kids into buying them for like $400, and they're not, you know, they're worth like $50 or something each. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's one of these things, though, where they're getting you out of your own center. They're getting you off of your own principles because you think, oh, these are stolen. I'm going to get them so cheap. And they're these great speakers. And they're just, even if it was, they were real good speakers and they were stolen, you still shouldn't be buying them. You know what I mean? It's like, right. You know, you're participating in something that's, you know, that's not ethical. Right. So it's an interesting thing. And then, you know, but his point was, it's like, you know, this man that was telling him this story was so angry at the other person, and he didn't even take any personal responsibility for his own part in it. You know, he was so out of his center.
We do have that capacity to believe what we know isn't true.
Yeah.
And then later to feel victimized by the exact same thing. And it just, this cycle, I don't know what that is. I've seen it. I've participated.
We all have
in that. You know? And, you know, but it's, again, that's, you know, once you lose the center, well, then they've got you, and
they got yourself.
And
yeah.
But this coming to the center, I mean, it's, he goes on to describe how it can really be a space and a place of great wisdom. It's not, you know, yes, you have this quietude and this calmness, but in there is usually the right answer to any specific problem. Is this core, this truth core, that from that, you know, has the wisdom of the world or the universe, and we know how to act and react from that, and we can bring our problems in there. But it is also, you know, such a secure place. And you mentioned calming the storm earlier, that it's kind of an other place too. If you're in your inner quietude and you're still, you know, frustrated and spun out by, you know, what somebody said in the world and what's going on and this and that, you're probably not really in that quietude space.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of apart from the down to that. Like when somebody has confidence and really knows who they are, they seem to take criticism quite well. They're not as embarrassed by a public misspeaking on something or forgetting something or doing something really, you know, stupid.
Yeah.
They brush themselves off and keep on going because they know that that's not important. You know, there's an inner security, and it's not just, you know, having a strong ego.
Yeah.
This is really, you know, that is one level of being self-confident and self-assured. You might be assured of a false self or an ego self.
Sure.
But we're really talking a different thing, that it is this, literally, it's a safe space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Within you that, you know, just isn't affected by the other. And since it isn't affected by those things, you can take those things in there and look at a problem or a situation without judgment, without fear, without preconcept or any of these antagonisms or resentments or any, what our feelings about the thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Those don't belong in there either. This is quieting all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. All that ego opinion stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, maybe not quite often, maybe every single time, if you can get to that point, the answer will become clear and the problem or the situation will be seen in its true light. And maybe that person that was annoying you that you just want to slap in their own way was maybe just trying to help, even though you don't want to hear their advice.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's enough of a reframing of the situation that could affect your behavior.
Sure. And but you got to go to that. Yeah. You got to go to that center to be able to even recognize that, to just get out of the problem situation and get into more solution oriented thinking. So you're just like opening up to the possibility of some good coming out of a situation by going to that divine life principle, as he called it, or that God center or that archetypal situation, he used all those different terms. Jung might call it the self. The self in India, they'd call it the self with a capital S. It's this eternal, invisible core within us that is connected to, connected to divine creator. And, we all have that. And he mentions too that everything that happens to us is moving us toward the center. So regardless of these situations and difficulties we face, that really our lives are moving us toward that center, and it's all for our own, our own good. So the more that we try to consciously connect with that center by, he said, go up into your mountain of silence, even if it's for just 5 minutes, so like silence, mountain of silence.
That's again, it's being like a part away from, you're in a,
but that, that could be figuratively speaking too. I mean, your mountain of silence could be in the middle of a noise and confusion situation, but you're going up into it within yourself, right? And you're finding that center in your own self. It could be in the middle of a battle. It could be in the middle of an argument, but you stop.
Well, actually, that's when you need it the most.
When you need it the most.
And that's an argument's a perfect example. Or if you're a caretaking type of person or a fixer, someone who likes to solve problems for people, if a situation arises, whether it's an argument or a crisis or somebody's in pain or frustrated about something, before you go fixing it and solving it, or trying to win the argument, pause for a moment. And this is a very, bit of practical advice that I wouldn't be saying if I haven't used it before, and if it hasn't proved itself, and it has many times for me. And it was something I had to learn and do deliberately at first, and now it's becoming more natural as a response. But that pause before fixing and helping and offering advice and throwing myself into the solution is just to pause and go, oh, yeah, that's terrible. I'm really sorry that person did that to you. Oh, gosh, that must feel terrible. And you be with the person for a minute, acknowledge where they are and what they're feeling before you go solving it.
Good point.
Or before you go, coming back with the right barb to throw in the argument.
Sure.
Just, pull it back. What are we arguing about? What am I doing? Oh.
Yeah.
She, even though I think I'm right and I could slam dunk this, this argument, you know what? She's just mad because I really wasn't listening to what she was saying, or whatever the thing is, that there's something behind it. There's something, that doesn't require a solution. Sometimes just, maybe that's behind a lot of therapy and, doctors or, anything like that. Part of it anyway can be not the prescriptive solution, but it's just that somebody sat down with me for 20 minutes and listened.
Sure.
To me, and I felt they were listening to me.
Oh, exactly.
Not pandering to my things, not making it worse, but not just jumping in to try, well, no, here's what you got to do. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the, moment developing that silence, isn't it? You're listening in quietude, and you're not trying to formulate what you're going to say or how you're going to argue, but you're just kind of witnessing and sharing that moment. And in the silence with that other person as well. And we can do that with ourselves too. That's the interesting thing about it. We can do that with our own ego and our own thoughts and so on, and kind of witness what they're doing and try to quiet things down and see what all the clamor is about and all that. Right.
Yeah. So what am I thinking? Do I really need to be having those thoughts? And why am I at level five, you know, when this is really nothing, and I get caught in my head and it's like, what? Oh, that's what I'm doing. I'm feeling like a victim because somebody didn't hear me.
Yeah.
You know, but you know what? Maybe I wasn't communicating properly. Sure. Or maybe the person's not going to hear me. So what?
Yeah.
Is it really worth me getting on this train? You know, stop the train of thought and then say, what am I doing? Why are these thoughts coming in my head? And but you acknowledge them. You're not trying to say no. You're just saying, whoa, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I really need to be like that? Maybe I don't. Maybe.
Sure. You know. And well, I think once you
power.
Once you recognize that too, then even going a step further and just maybe focusing on the heart or focusing on the breath and letting those thoughts still and kind of allow things to just calm down. Like, you know, there's a sort of a, you know, like a muddy pond or something, you know, it's all stirred up. You just watch and allow it to kind of the sediment to sink down to the bottom. Things eventually will become clear. So
you constructively quiet.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, thinking sometimes, especially if we're trying to figure things out or figure somebody else out or, you know, trying to really actively work on these problems, it can get us, it can help, but then it gets us only so far. So then after that, to kind of let it go and, you know, let that pond still, let that sediment sink down to the bottom and let the clarity come through. And remember too, like Manly Hall says, we do not need to hope for good. We already have this good. So you don't need to hope for something. That good is already at your center. That wisdom is already at your center. That truth core is already within you, you know, and it provides you all the basic principles to answer all your problems. He made that very clear. And so sometimes it's just a matter of listening in a better way and quieting the mind down and quieting the ego down. And, you know, he even made the recommendation especially sometimes when you're really caught in a quandary, to sleep on something and let the ego get out of the way. Oftentimes in the morning, you know, when all of your desires and needs and all this other stuff has gotten out of the way, something clear will come through. So all beautiful advice. I recommend that you listen to this full lecture, because there's so much more to it that we weren't able to even get into. So do check that out at Manly Hall Society on YouTube. You can go to manlyhall.com as well and get to the lectures through there, right, Chris?
Yeah, that's it. Some of them anyway have transcripts, and this one
has the transcript as well, right?
Transcripts, okay. So you can read along, or you know, some people do better looking at the words.
Yeah,
I like to do both.
Yeah, so that's a great way to do it. So again, go ahead.
Oh, and then most of the videos, I think, on the YouTube channel have, whether they're specifically transcribed or they're auto-generated through YouTube, they do have the English subtitles. And even listening to Manly Hall, sometimes I like seeing the words too.
Because there's
some, he kind of spoke the written word, and his writing, you can hear his voice. So he kind of wrote the spoken word. The line between spoken and written is very
thin with him.
Indeterminate. Yeah. With that. So it works. And to have both, to have the audio and the text going at the same time, for me, you know, I love it, you know? So it's another way to experience this great material. But the real way to experience it is to have a listen to us, this show, take a read, and then bring it in to your truth core and see what it means to you.
That's the takeaway, isn't it? So reaching the center, truth leads all things to itself, Manly Hall. Manly Hall Society on YouTube, look that one up. Or check out Chris's website that he runs, manlyhall.com. Also chrissheridan.com if you want to find out more about Chris and his book that he's written, which is called The Spirit in the Sky. I have a book called If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate, and that is on Amazon. Chris's book is on Amazon as well, or at cosmiceye.org. I have the books up there, so you can check that out. And again, please support us if you can. Amazon in my head. Anchor.fm/cosmiceye. You can make a small donation there if you can afford it, or a large donation if you want to. Hey, I don't want to put constraints on
yeah.
If you're feeling generous, please do support us. And, you know, also if you can, try to share us on social media and so on. We're on Instagram. I'm at, Jason Napolitano, at Jason Napolitano on Instagram. There's also at Cosmic Eye Center. And then Chris, you're at Chris Sheridan 33, right? On Instagram.
I think so.
So, and those, you know, those things are also up on cosmiceye.org. So thank you again for joining us. It was a great show today. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. And all the great work you're doing on this Manly Hall stuff. There's some beautiful lectures up there. So definitely when you go listen to this, subscribe to the channel and listen to the great work that Chris is putting up on there. So Manly Hall Society. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye and God bless.